Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Mothball Prophecies. I am your host, Jonathan. Get comfortable, because this episode is probably going to be a bit longer than usual. Grab your favorite drink, get some edibles, and get ready for a story that has so many twists and swerves that it was nearly impossible for me to lay it out linearly. Today, we're going to discuss a figure who has always fascinated me, and who has fascinated and captured the minds of others. He's been called a diplomat, an alchemist, a gemologist, an ascended master, an immortal spirit who has helped guide the events of the Western world over the course of centuries. He even came to New Orleans to feed on the blood of unsuspecting victims. Supposedly. Who am I talking about? That's stylin', profilin', future predictin', revolution interdictin', fate abatin', rarely masticatin', alchemy makin', accolade takin', age defyin', never dyin', son of a gun! Woo! That's right, we're talking about the Comte de Saint-Germain. Now, when I first set out to research today's topic, I wanted to focus on the historic facts about Saint-Germain. Which I will do. However, the facts surrounding this person are rather sparse and muddled. But the historicity of Saint-Germain is something completely different. He shows up at key points throughout history to influence things like the French Revolution, the signing of the Declaration of Independence, and more. Saint-Germain is somewhat of an occult figure and has been able to reincarnate sometimes in multiple people at once, as we'll discover later on. As I was reading the various works about, and supposedly by, the Comte de Saint-Germain, I could almost see how people compared him to a Christ figure. Here's this guy who just shows up to places, works miracles, relays prophecies, and then disappears. And then returns in some other place and time to do the same. Then I realized that the Comte de Saint-Germain is not so much a Christ figure as he is Forrest Gump in a powdered wig, just awkwardly inserted into history, supposedly facilitating major events in Europe and America and the West Indies. So let's get into the life of the Comte de Saint-Germain as found in historical texts, and I warn you, I may trade off and just call him Saint-Germain. Probably going to switch throughout the entire episode. To understand Saint-Germain, we have to work backwards from his death, since it seems to be the only actual date available. Saint-Germain died on February 27, 1874. Going backwards, it seems he used a number of titles and names, which was not unusual for nobility at the time. But the one that seems to show up more than once is Rákóczi, or Záróggi, which is simply an anagram of Rákóczi. Rákóczi is a noble name in Hungary, specifically Transylvania. Francis II Rákóczi lived from 1676 until 1725 and was said to have had three sons. But the first son he had died at the age of four. Now, Francis II Rákóczi allied himself with France to squash the Habsburg Empire in Austria and gain independence for Hungary at the same time. In 1704, the Battle of Blenheim saw British and Austrian forces clashing with the French and the Hungarians, and the result was victory for the Austrians, and therefore the Habsburg Empire. Now this placed Francis II in a bit of a pickle. However, the aristocrats and clergy of Hungary elected Francis as ruling prince, Soon after this, as various countries were making peace with the Habsburgs, Hungary also laid down, and just as quickly as Rákóczi had gained the title of prince in Hungary, it was removed. So he moved to Poland. Or, to put it in official terms, he was exiled from Hungary in 1711. In fact, he was even offered the Polish crown, not once, but twice, and had the support of Tsar Peter I in Russia, and he turned the crown down both times, even though he remained in Poland and offered his services. He then traveled to England to meet Queen Anne, but the influence of the Habsburg Empire was also very great in England at the time, and she refused him at court. However, he was favored by both the Ottoman Empire and Louis XIV of France, and traveled to both regions with great honors. The history books note that Francis II, Rákóczi, was survived by two sons at the time of his death in 1735. Both sons spent quite a bit of time in Turkey, Vienna, France, and possibly Italy. When Francis Rákóczi died, he left something to every member of his family, his wife, his children, and, mysteriously, the son who allegedly died at the age of 4. But why would he do this? Francis Rákóczi was not considered a person in poor mental health. This is where we pick up with the life of Saint-Germain, as detailed in The Secret of Kings by Isabel Cooper Oakley, a monograph, The Comte de Saint-Germain. In her book, we first meet Saint-Germain in the courts of France, where various tales are told about his encounters with Madame Pompadour, Voltaire, and other notables of the time. It is at these gatherings that Saint-Germain hinted at his true relation to the Rákóczi bloodline, which was kept under wraps for fear of Habsburg spies, and his true identity was that he was raised under the tutelage of the de' Medici family. Now, I'm not even halfway through this story, and it's been fairly convoluted from the start. So if you want to know more about the de' Medicis, they were a big banking family with ties to politicians back in the 14th and 15th centuries. There are numerous books on the Medicis, or you can go watch the series on Netflix. Suffice it to say, they were very powerful and influential, which could account for Saint-Germain's fantastic education and knowledge of the aristocracy. He was described as follows. He looked about 50, neither stout nor thin, had a fine intellectual countenance, dressed very simply, but with taste. He wears the finest diamonds on a snuff box, watch, and buckles. But the mystery with which he is surrounded is owing to his princely liberality. And in every damned instance, well, nearly every damned instance, regardless of the time period, Saint-Germain appears elegant and somewhere around the age of 50. Isabel Cooper Oakley then goes on about how Saint-Germain was a splendid violinist, knew the latest scientific discoveries of the day, knew at least a dozen languages, and had traveled the world. This is just in the first few pages of her book. Saint-Germain knew princes, kings, queens, and spent years with the Shah of Persia, where he supposedly acquired knowledge of gems. In 1745, he was in England, participating in the Jacobite Revolution. Horace Walpole, a British historian of the time, wrote in one of his letters, "The other day they seized a man who goes by the name Count Saint-Germain. He has been here these 2 years, and will not tell who he is or whence, but professes that he does not go by his right name. He sings and plays on the violin wonderfully, is mad and not very sensible. In 1760, Louis XV sent Saint Germain on a political mission to England. Supposedly, he was well received, and allegedly, there are two pieces of music in the British Museum that were composed by Saint Germain, one dated 1745 and the other 1760. I say allegedly because I could not find proof of these compositions. From here, we lose track of Saint-Germain until the French Revolution. That's right, Saint-Germain appeared to warn Marie Antoinette of the coming revolution and to lay down the prophecy of the fall of the aristocracy. He offered his services to help quell the revolution, but the queen would not hear of it, and went so far as to have him locked up in the Bastille. But a short while later, the Comte de Saint-Germain walked through her door, warned her once again of the impending doom following the revolution, and disappeared. There are many other grand adventures and intrigues that come from the life and times of Saint-Germain, and I am only covering the very surface. There are stories of Saint-Germain in the East Indies, and others pertaining to his knowledge of Masonic rites. If you want to know more about the details, pick up The Secret of Kings by Isabel Cooper Oakley. I'll link that in the show notes. It gets into all sorts of minutia, complete with footnotes that may or may not be verified because the reference texts and people who are forgotten to the sands of time. Saint-Germain died on February 27, 1874, despite all the wild tales of his travels to Egypt, India, and the whole of Europe. His estate upon his death was very simple: clothing and some cash. He was considered a member of the aristocratic courts, but there were no jewels, no diamonds, not even the violin he seemed so fond of playing. But just because there is a record of someone's death doesn't mean the legend of that person dies with them. The tales of Saint-Germain persisted into the 19th century and became a key pillar, or ascended master, in theosophy. Now, for those who are unfamiliar with theosophy, it's a sect that was founded in the United States in the 19th century by Madame Helena Blavatsky. It's an interesting blend of Western occultism with a smattering of Hinduism and Buddhism, as synthesized by Western minds. It was the New Age before the New Age had its own section at your local bookstore. Theosophy, in very broad strokes, holds that there is a divine power over everything in the universe, but that there is also reincarnation. Part of theosophy, as created by Madame Blavatsky, is the root races. And suddenly, this not-so-little sidebar on Saint Germain starts to get ugly. You see, according to Blavatsky, there were seven root races. First came the Polarians. They were composed of etheric matter and reproduced by dividing, much like single-cell organisms. Then came the Hyperboreans. And unlike Robert Howard's famous Hyperborean, Conan the Barbarian, these were people who had golden skin and lived in places such as Canada, Iceland, and Scandinavia. The third root race was the Lemurians. They came from the lost continent of Lemuria, which is like the Pacific Ocean's version of Atlantis, but never say that to someone who believes in the teachings of Lemuria, because the whole Atlantis versus Lemuria schism is like arguing your favorite sports ball teams. It's the same bullshit with different logos and all meaningless. Go Saints! And there were the Atlanteans, which came into being over 4 million years ago. when Atlantis sank, the inhabitants of that island dispersed to Africa, India, Asia, North America, and the Mediterranean. Root race number 5 is the Aryans. Stick a pin in that one. They are the Persians, the Celts, the Teutons. Surprise! And it is suddenly, absolutely no surprise that the whole Thule Society, you know, the occult wing of the Nazi Party, gravitated to Blavatsky's writings. But we'll get into that at another time. I mean, geez, it could probably take me 5 episodes to get through Blavatsky's ties to the Nazi occultism. It's wonderful. So, there are 2 other root races, but apparently they have not come into being yet. They were supposed to come about with the evolution or spiritual evolution of the human race. But despite modern-day theosophy claiming to strive for a unity of the human race, Blavatsky and her followers had no problem dropping the word degenerate when describing Semitic people. Nor did they exactly do anything to disabuse anyone of the notion that white people were at the top of the pyramid in this theosophy. So, what the hell does any of this have to do with Saint Germain? See, in philosophy, Saint Germain was considered an ascended master, who was responsible for ushering in the Age of Aquarius, and no, I'm not playing that song in the background. An ascended master is someone of great power and wisdom who reincarnates for every great age. The short list of people that Saint Germain has been in the past includes a high priest of Atlantis. You see, when Atlantis sank, Saint Germain fled to Transylvania and lit the flame of freedom, which, given the history of Hungary, must have been a very small flame, or well hidden. Saint Germain was also Plato. He was also Joseph of Nazareth. That's right, Mary's husband. He was Merlin, Roger Bacon, the scientist, and not the last Bacon Saint Germain would be. He was Christopher Columbus, and well, that kind of lines up with Blavatsky's writings. And he was Francis Bacon, father of the scientific revolution in Europe, and it should be noted, it was as Francis Bacon that Saint Germain supposedly wrote all of Shakespeare's plays, despite all historical evidence to the contrary. It was also as Francis Bacon that he traveled to Transylvania and once again reinstated the Rakoczy family name, and where he ascended or attained immortality. Again, for the first time. Does your head hurt yet? Mine does. So, we can account for the many lives of Saint-Germain up until his death, but what about after his death? Theosophists claim to have met him many times in many places since his death in 1784. The earliest appearance after his historical death was in 1896, when he met Annie Besant, a British author and theosophist who was very outspoken in favor of India's independence from the British Empire. Then there was Charles Leadbetter, who claimed to have met Saint Germain in Rome, where he showed Leadbetter a robe worn by a Roman emperor, Saint Germain didn't say which one, and told him all about the magic rituals he performed in his castle in Transylvania. In 1930, Saint Germain met Guy Ballard on Mount Shasta in California. Guy Ballard, it should be noted, founded the I Am movement in the U.S., which is an offshoot of theosophy. And if you do believe in theosophy, and reincarnation. Look up a picture of Guy Ballard and tell me he does not remind you of Marshall Applewhite. Edgar Casey, while in a trance, said that Saint Germain would appear when needed. Hell, people have been claiming to have met Saint Germain as recently as 2014. What I found interesting in reading up on recent encounters with Saint Germain is that Peter Mount Shasta, that's his name, he's an author of meditation books, claimed to have met Saint Germain in Marin County, California in 1973. And that year stuck out to me because in the 70s, there was already at least one person who was claiming to be Saint Germain. Enter Elizabeth Clare Prophet. Elizabeth Clare Prophet grew up in New Jersey, and like most clever people who don't have the last name Springsteen, she got the hell out of there as soon as she could. Her mother was big into theosophy, and that rubbed off on Elizabeth, who went on to lead the Church Universal and Triumphant in Montana. Now, the church had a rather large following and pulled in enough donations to buy the Forbes Ranch, yes, once owned by Malcolm Forbes, roughly 12,000 acres in property. Among many things, the Church Universal and Triumphant believes that the Ascended Masters exist. To this day, because the church is still operational, it offers the Ascended Master's Commitment, which states, "The commitment of the individual is matched by commitment from the Ascended Masters. When you become a keeper of the flame, you have a tie through the office of the messengers to the Ascended Masters who sponsor that order. When you become a communicant, you have a figure eight flow to the office of the Vicar of Christ, with greater assistance from the Ascended Masters." Yep, the writings of Madame Blavatsky are still alive and well. But back to Elizabeth Clare Prophet. She claimed that Saint Germain spoke through her to her congregation. Let's listen to a snippet from one of her sermons.
"I am the keeper of the flame of freedom for every nation. Saint Germain, you have called me, and Uncle Sam. I am he, and I am here. I am in the flame of the holy science and of that religion which is yours to claim. Yes, I come, a believer and a teacher of the law of reincarnation. The law of the coming again and again of the soul is your cosmic justice. It is that cause of freedom whereby you understand that the goal and the calling of America and every true free nation is to lead mankind into that way of higher consciousness. This is my mantra, which I give to you. I am a being of violet fire. I am the purity God desires. Hail Saint Germain!
Hail Saint Germain! Hail Saint Germain! Hail Saint Germain!"
Yep. And of course, Mrs. Prophet also believed that Saint Germain took many forms. Here she is, telling the story about Saint Germain working with the founding fathers of the United States.
"At that time, then, he turned his attention to the United States, where he had already been working behind the scenes with George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, in actually preparing the Constitution of the United States and inspiring that declaration as well as the revolution, the freedom of those independent colonies. Just at the moment of indecision, at precisely 5 o'clock, July 4th, 1776, Saint Germain appeared on the balcony. The doors remained locked, but he appeared. he gave an impassioned speech to the delegates, and he told them to sign that document. And the energy that he released was so intense that immediately they coalesced, and they all signed the document, beginning with John Hancock.
And if you couldn't tell from the modular synth music in the background, that was ripped directly from an In Search of episode. Now, where would any splinter sect be without a doomsday prophecy? You see, Elizabeth Clare Prophet predicted that the world would end in March of 1990 due to nuclear war. This moved her followers to build a large bomb shelter on what was previously the ranch owned by Malcolm Forbes. Construction, however, was halted with a court order. When large amounts of fuel leaked from the compound and contaminated the ground. However, church officials claim that it was just a drill when the prophecy failed to come true. And as an aside, go read When Prophecy Fails. It's a great book about the cognitive dissonance involved in cults and pretty much any organization based around a personality. It could be used for political campaigns, businesses, and yes, cults. I'll link it in the show notes. Anyway, ascended in 2009. But the church continues and recently made a $3.3 million deal with the government to use its ranch as a wildlife corridor. But there is still another account of Saint Germain existing in the 1970s. Richard Chanfray, a French media celebrity and singer, claimed to be the reincarnation of Saint Germain, and he was, according to him, 17,000 years old. Among some songs, such as Galaxy Express, which I posted to the Facebook page the other day, go check it out if you haven't already, and Being a Heartthrob, Richard is best known for murdering a wealthy couple, going to prison, and then asphyxiating in a car. Hey, if you're gonna ascend, at least make it newsworthy. So, we've been all over the world following the Count of Saint Germain, and since this podcast is based in New Orleans, I would be remiss if I left out one last tale. In 1902, a mysterious stranger arrived in New Orleans and took up residence on Royal Street, which seems to be the place for things of this nature to happen. This stranger was a man of no discernible age, had recently emigrated from France, and claimed his name was Jacques Saint-Germain. He threw parties for the prominent figures of New Orleans, though he himself did not partake in food or drink. He loved to tell his guests wild stories about his travels in Italy, France, and the Middle East. He spoke of historical events in such detail that it seemed as if he had witnessed them himself. While guests didn't care about the veracity of his stories, he spun tales in such an entertaining manner that all were rapt. It so happened that months later, the police were called to Saint-Germain's house on Royal Street to investigate a woman who had leapt from the balcony. She survived the fall, but was terrified and told people that she jumped to escape Jacques Saint-Germain after he bit her neck. Because Jacques Saint-Germain was already a beloved socialite, a mere few months after moving to New Orleans, the police told him not to bother coming in for questioning that night, but rather to come into the station the following morning. But he never showed. When the police went back to his home, they found that he had left most of his belongings behind. However, If you believe this or any other story about Saint-Germain, the police found bottles of wine in his home, which, upon further inspection, contained, yes, wine, but also large quantities of human blood. The man, known as Jacques Saint-Germain, was never seen in New Orleans again. This, as the story goes, was not so much a blow to law enforcement as it was to local New Orleanians who were left without great parties to attend. One more note on the overarching life or lives of Saint-Germain. Through many of the stories, his immortality and youthful appearance was attributed to a magic elixir. No one knows the ingredients of this elixir, though a quick search on Google yields a number of digital age snake oil salesmen who claim to have the tincture people have sought for centuries. Some even claim to have been given the recipe by Saint-Germain himself. Me? I prefer the elderflower liqueur that goes by the ascended master's name, especially when mixed with chartreuse, or anything, really. But the name Saint-Germain on the bottle is a marketing gimmick. Much like the name Saint-Germain has been used, as evidenced in this very episode, for everything from religious sects to books, musicians, murderers, and local tourism. In fact, I would say the strongest quality of Saint-Germain's life over the centuries is the utter lack of evidence of his existence. Much like other figures that people give great importance to, who have seemingly no factual existence apart from the legends told about them. That's the big difference between history and historicity. And that about wraps it up for this episode on the Comte de Saint-Germain. As always, if you like this episode, share it with your friends. Also, join our Facebook page where we post bonus material related to these episodes that doesn't get included in the show. Until next time, sleep tight.